Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the web, Midnight Black Mass, a production brought to you by YourSourceWrestlingHistory.com, where we bring you discussions and interviews with figures from the world of wrestling, entertainment, and general pop culture. And now, the GWH Radio Network presents Midnight Black Mass.
Oh, Tannenbaum, oh, Tannenbaum, weißt du, sieh ein Blase. Oh, Tannenbaum, oh, Tannenbaum, weißt du, sieh dein Vater. Du grüßt nie, nur uns Sommerzeit, bei Nacht und Winter, wenn es schneit. Oh, Tannenbaum, oh, Tannenbaum, bei Dreh und Sieg, dein Mann.
Hey, Hitler, what's the matter, little guy?
Satan, du Tannenbaum, bei Dreh und Sieg, dein Blatter.
Oh, you don't have a Christmas tree?
No, it's dein, dein, du Winter, wenn es schneit.
Well, I tell you what, maybe we'll have ourselves a little Christmas right here. Come on, everyone, gather around.
String up the lights and light up the tree. We're gonna make some revelry. Spirits are high, so I can tell it's Christmas time in hell. Demons are nicer as you pass them by. There's lots of demon toys to buy. The snow is falling and all is well. It's Christmas time in hell. There goes Jeffrey Dahmer with a festive Christmas ham. After he has sex with it, he'll eat up all he can. And there goes John F. Kennedy, caroling with his son.
Reunited for the holidays, God bless everyone.
Everybody has a happy glow, let's dance in blood and pretend it's snow.
Even Mao Zedong is under the spell,
it's Christmas time in hell.
Adolf, here's a present for you.
Oh, oh, Tannenbaum!
Yes, a Tannenbaum.
God cast me down from heaven's door to rule in hell forevermore. But now I'm kind of glad that I fell, cause it's Christmas time in hell.
Here's a rack to hang the stockings on. We still have to shop for Genghis Khan.
Michael Landon's hair looks swell. It's Christmas time in hell. There's Princess Diana holding burning mistletoe. Over poor Gene Siskel's head, just watch his weenie grow.
For one day we all stop burning, and the flames are not so thick. All the screaming and the torture stops as we wait for old Saint Nick. So string up the lights and light up the tree. We're damned for all eternity, but for just one day, all is well. It's Christmas time in hell.
Gather close together and make it quick. We gotta make room for Andy Dick. Wake his mother and ring the bell. It's Christmas time. Christmas time. It's Christmas time in hell.
Merry Christmas, movie house!
Thank you.
holidays to you all. This is your maniacal minister of the occult, the devil you know, good old Satan Claus himself, the Reverend Dan Wilson here for another edition of the Midnight Black Mass. And I do apologize for our hiatus last week. I had a family event and welcoming my daughter, Lorelei Elizabeth Wilson, to the world and was not available for the broadcast, but we aired a nice archive for you of Hank Williams III and Unknown Henson, who I will be seeing tomorrow night in Chattanooga, Tennessee for the seventh time at the Honest Pint. If you're in the scenic city, you want to check out the King of Country Western Troubadours. And also, now I will be there tomorrow night because I'm suspended. That's okay. As you say, I'm going to the King, so I'm having a good time. Don't worry about me. But NWA Anarchy, Cordelia, Georgia, Seasons Beatings 2011. And that's going to be a huge night as the NWA World Heavyweight Champion, Scrap Iron Adam Pearce, comes to town. Defending in a three-way dance against my man, the NWA Anarchy Heavyweight Champion, the Son of Satan Azrael, and another guy I'm very close with and had a lot of history with, the NWA North American Champion, the Temptation, Shawn Tempers. So two out of three ain't bad for the old Rev, and very good chances that someone that I've been associated with for many years will walk away NWA World Heavyweight Champion tomorrow night in Cornelia, Georgia. On to the music news. Before we get going, got a big show tonight. We've got Kelly Fisher, the author of the Last Resort Zombie Trilogy books, available on Amazon.com. We have the Muji Movie Minute. We've got another seance. We've got a whole lot to get to in this jam-packed edition. At the top of the hour, you heard Adolf Hitler singing O Tannenbaum, followed by Satan the Dark Lord singing Christmas Time in Hell, brought to you by, of course, Trey Parker and Matt Stone of South Park fame, off of the classic, what I would recommend as a must-have piece of your holiday listening, Mr. Hanky's Christmas Classics. They did a television episode about it, but there's actually a full-length album that they released with all these songs from South Park and the Christmas episodes. Fantastic stuff. And then, of course, you heard No Presents for Christmas by the legendary King Diamond, that actually was released as a single on December 25th, 1985. It was the first recording by King Diamond's solo band after the breakup of Merciful Fate. Why is that relevant? Well, we're here to the music news, and there were some big, big happenings over the past week. Metallica celebrates their 30th anniversary with a three-day concert spectacular. The legendary Fillmore Coliseum in San Francisco. They talk about a special guest lineup over the course of 3 days. If you were a metal fan, you had to have had the biggest boner that you could possibly imagine or comprehend. 30 years of Metallica. Say what you want about Metallica over the years. Certainly, they've gotten their share of flack, but at some level or another, every metalhead can bond over something Metallica-related. Either it was the first album that turned you on, or it was something that grabbed you, or was a soundtrack to your childhood, or maybe you like the new stuff, where some of the fans don't, but, you know, that's quite a possibility. But on this amazing 30th anniversary, first of all, you had Dave Mustaine playing with the band for the first time since they kicked him out after the first album in 1983. You had Ron McGovney, who played bass before Cliff Burton even joined the band, on the original No Life to Leather demo for Hit the Lights, and not only those guys, big Metallica history, of course. They had a tribute to Cliff Burton with Cliff's father, Ray. You had people like Jim Martin of Faith No More, Pepper Keenan from Down and Corrosion Conformity, Gary Rossington from Lynyrd Skynyrd, Rob Halford from Judas Priest, Glenn Danzig, Animal from the Anti-Nowhere League, of course, famous cover of Metallica's is their song So What, and he did the vocals on that, Jason Newsted, the bass player from probably their most profitable era of the late 80s and early 90s, Bob Rock, the producer of those albums, the Black Album and beyond, Ozzy Osbourne and Geezer Butler, the original Black Sabbath, Hugh Tanner and Lloyd Grant, who were associated with the band in the early days. Amazing, amazing thing. And then, of course, capped it off was a Merciful Fate reunion with King Diamond, Hank Sherman,
Timmy Hansen, all, like 4 out of 5 original members of Merciful Fate played that Merciful Fate medley from the Garage Inc. album with Metallica. So just amazing. Hey, go over to Metallica.com or their official Facebook page. There's a lot of video up there. You just got to see this. This is like holy metal communion of some kind, you know? And then not to be outdone is the late, great Dimebag Darrell. And had my daughter not been born last week, we would have done a tribute edition of the show to Dimebag. And we'll still do that in the future. But in Hollywood, California, they were having their own tribute. They had Dime Bash 2011 at the Key Club in Los Angeles. Many of Dimebag's associates and friends, of course, Benny Paul, his brother on hand, is Rita Haney, his longtime girlfriend, fiance. The late, great Dime was honored in a true metal fashion. All proceeds of this went to Ronnie James Dio's Stand Up and Shout Fund to cure cancer. They had guests like Tim the Ripper Owens, former Judas Priest frontman, Geezer Butler from Black Sabbath there, too. He's making the rounds. Jared Cantrell from Alice in Chains, Dave Draymond from Disturbed, Duff McKagan of the Guns N' Roses, Serge Tankanian from System of a Down, Mike Mirr from Suicidal Tendencies, Sebastian Bach, John Five, Scott Ian from Anthrax, Warren DeMartini from Rat, Tom Morello from Rage Against the Machine, Gene Hoglan from Fear Factory, Deathlock, Joey Vera from Armored Saint, Ginger Fish from Marilyn Manson and Rob Zombie, Doug Fendick from King's X. I could go on and on and on, but again, a great metal communion, and it just makes my heart so warm with the fires of hell to see all of these metal names getting together to honor tradition, history, respect, both the fallen and the ones that are still with us. It was a tremendous week, and it was a perfect week for my daughter to be born because she's metal as anything. Let me tell you, don't get no sleep. Completely incoherent. Shit's all over the place. And also a total sweetheart and the love of my life. But enough about that because you don't want to hear the ref gushing about his kid on the air. I know, I know. About to get to the Mood You Movie Minute. But before we do that, I do just want to bring to your attention that Lamb of God, the metal powerhouse out of Richmond, Virginia, they are back in the studio and a new album set to drop on January 24th of 2012. It's called Resolution, and ooh, 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 we got a sneak peek for you. The first single off of that, it's out on video, it's on YouTube. You need to go check it out. It's called Ghost Walking from Lamb of God off the new album, Resolution. the upcoming release, Resolution. That is the single that has now been officially released. The album is coming January 24th, 2012. But right now, folks, it is time for the Movie Minute. Now it's the holiday. And that would be 1974's classic Black Christmas, a Canadian movie. Muji, welcome to the show, my friend.
Hello, hello.
And how are you doing this fine and chilly December evening, my man?
Doing pretty good.
Excellent. Well, what do you have on the ticket, on the plate, for us to gobble up tonight here on the Muji Movie Minute?
Well, like you said, we're talking about the classic from 1974, Black Christmas, as you mentioned, a Canadian film. One of the early slasher classics. It's a great movie. Quick on the plot is right off the bat in the movie, you get the classic POV shot that, you know, I think the most famous in horror was in Halloween. It starts the movie out this way. This is like a more shaky one that kind of hadn't perfected the craft yet. But you get that. You get an early kill in the movie. And then the basic theme of the movie is there is a chick named Jess, who's played by Olivia Hussey, who does, you know, one of the really good acting jobs in the movie, who's living in a sorority house. The big conflict in the movie is she finds out she's pregnant, and then she tells her boyfriend, she's thinking about having an abortion, which, of course, in the 70s was considered, a horrible thing by, you know, by the majority of people. And throughout the movie, a bunch of her friends and stuff in the sorority house keep, you know, one by one kind of disappearing, and they keep getting prank phone calls. And the movie is really good. They set up a lot of the scares and everything in like a whole bunch of different cool ways. It's got the combination, kind of the best of both worlds. One is it's creepy. They incorporate the use of like Christmas caroling and stuff like that in the movie to, you know, intensify it. The soundtrack is really, you know, it's really different. Like it's other than like the Christmas songs, there's not like a whole lot of, you know, songs and stuff like that. There's just a whole lot of like really creepy noises. And then B, it's scary because all of the kills and stuff like that, when the killer is around, other than one shot of his eyeball, are from the POV view, so you really know absolutely nothing about the killer. And they consistently create tension by having like the phone calls and everything in the movie. So they go about it like three ways, just creating, you know, a scary atmosphere throughout the whole film.
Yeah, and I would agree. And one thing about this movie, you can see, as you mentioned with Halloween, the impact that this movie had on a lot of other movies that would follow it, just the way it was made. There was a remake, and it was okay. I mean, you know, it wasn't terrible, but this, you got to see the classic. You got to see the original. Margot Kidder is in it. Of course, Lois Lane from Superman fame. But as you mentioned, Olivia Hussey, probably the first pair of tits a lot of guys ever saw, if you want to get right down to it, because of her role as Juliet in Romeo and Juliet. And, well, that was a required viewing in school. And so, you know, most everybody you know, if you knew these sheltered guys, hadn't got into the porn stash yet, then she probably held that distinct honor. But that's just purely an aside.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great cast. Margot Kidder is one of the most entertaining parts of the whole movie. She actually plays another chick that lives in the sorority house. And, kind of similar to her Lois Lane character, she's kind of sassy. I mean, in this movie, she's really foul-mouthed. She's getting drunk the whole time and stuff. But, I mean, you can tell that, you know, just from right there, you know, she's got a lot of charisma. She's going to have good things to come. And then a police officer who's kind of investigating everything that's going on in the house as the movie goes on, is played by John Saxon, who, of course, you know, later goes on to be in Nightmare on Elm Street as Nancy's dad, so he's in two of the the most classic horror movies of all time.
And interestingly enough, playing pretty much the exact same character without one shade of difference.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I actually remember watching a making of the Nightmare on Elm Street, you know, when they were talking about when they were casting, you know, that's actually, this movie's what got him cast is, you know, they, was it, everybody on that remembered him from this. And then crazily, the movie is directed by Bob Clark, who directed Porky's and another Christmas classic of a totally different kind, A Christmas Story. So you make Black Christmas, you make a Christmas Story like 10 years later. It's a pretty wild there.
So wait, did Black Christmas really preceded A Christmas Story?
Yeah, Christmas Story seems really old and everything from watching it on TV, but it actually didn't come out until 1983.
Never investigated that, so I wasn't sure, but okay, well, that makes sense. So he does Black Christmas in 1974, and then, a great flick. As I say, highly recommended. The remake was okay, but you've got to check the original. So creative in how it builds everything up.
Yeah, I think it's great. Actually, I give it 84% well done. It's really good. I think, you know, kind of with a lot of the things it does in the movie, it kind of sets a blueprint later for movies. It has some stuff that's, you know, it's like parts of the movie go along a little bit slow, and then parts of the movie, it seems like they, I don't know, there's like content and stuff that not necessarily goes with right along with the story. But it's really good, and it also, like I said, set a blueprint for Halloween and for a lot of other movies like that. You know, this is how you can go about, you know, going about your scares.
Yeah, I mean, Scream, Don't Answer the Phone, When a Stranger Calls, you know, those all came after, like, Christmas, and basically used that same, and it's an age-old tale of, you know, that there's a killer stalking a young girl, and he's calling her over and over again, and he's threatening her, and he's saying these vile things on the phone. And then, of course, the police trace the line, and they find out the calls are coming from inside the house.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, it does that, and you know, it has a lot. I mean, it has, you know, some, you know, other intricate kind of plot things. Like, they set it up to make you think that maybe the main chick's boyfriend is the one who's, you know, trying to kill her. They actually do everything they can to point out that it's him. And then, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen it, you know, he, at the very end, when she's the only one left in the house, you know, he ends up confronting her and stuff. But they never reveal the identity of the killer, which is a pretty cool thing. In movies, it's a lot scarier when, you know, the less you know about the person doing the kills. It's not always the case, but most of the time.
And, you know, for sure, the fear of the unknown is a very powerful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So, like I said, highly recommend it. You know, it's in, you know, probably the top, you know, 15 or so horror movies. You know, definitely it's probably in, like, the top, like, you know, 5 or 6, the most important ones. On movies that have caused, you know, all the other great movies to come out. So highly recommend it.
Yeah, absolutely. So check it out. If you want to get frightened this holiday season, head on over to Amazon.com and purchase your copy of the original 1974 Canadian masterpiece, Black Christmas. Muji, we will be right back here next week with one final one before the big holiday. Still trying to get my hands on that Bill Goldberg Santa Sleigh movie. We know it's going to be god-awful, but now I see Netflix has removed it, so go figure. You keep this shitty movie in my queue for a whole year, and I don't touch it, and then it gets time for the holidays, and I want to see Bill Goldberg as a satanic Santa Claus murdering some folks, and I can't even get that. So that's the you, Netflix. That's a gripe. But regardless, Muji, thank you again for joining us, my friend, and we'll see you next week.
Bye. See ya.
And fans, that was the Muji Movie Minute. And right now, we're moving right along. We have our special guest for the evening on the line. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Kelly Fisher to the show. Hello, Kelly.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing awesome. How are you?
I'm good. I just heard you talking about the Goldberg movie. Corey and I watched it. It's great. You should totally check it out.
Awesome. That's what we want to hear, folks, right here live on the Midnight Black Mass. Kelly is giving her recommendation that we should check out Santa Slay. So I'm going to do everything I can to get my hands on that for our Muji Movie Minute next week. Kelly, thanks for joining the show. You got a big book out here now on Amazon.com. It's called The Last Resort, The Savior, The Love Triangle, Set in a Zombie Apocalypse. You can go right now and purchase your copy there on Amazon for only 99 cents on your Kindle or your e-reader. If I understand correctly, this is part one of a trilogy.
Yes, sir. The second one should be coming out in a few days. I'm already done with it. I've actually already started on the third one, but the second one should be coming out soon.
That's awesome. A trilogy is a great way to tell a story. Many people refer to the three-act play, and a lot of times you've got to have those three acts to really drive the point home. Many great things come in trilogies. You look at Star Wars, my personal favorite, the originals, not these remakes. And, of course, Lord of the Rings, a lot of people are huge over. All very important trilogies, and that's becoming more and more prevalent in media, both in books and film, television. So that's great to hear. Why don't you take us inside that universe and what made you want to make it a trilogy?
Actually, it came to me in a dream, a nightmare, you would say. And I woke up and was like, wow, this would make an awesome book. So I just started writing it. And as I was writing it, it was like somebody was channeling through me to write it. So the story pretty much tells itself on its own.
That is amazing. Well, do you care to give us some background on what drove you to become an author and how much of this book in particular? I know you said it came from a dream, but, as you're going, of course, your brain is always going to draw back on personal experience. And that's really, a lot of us have lived some pretty interesting lives. So there's got to be a lot of interesting experience to come from that. And how much of that did you draw from your own life?
Well, actually, I've always written poetry and song lyrics because I always wanted to be a singer when I was younger. But when I had this dream, like I said, I woke up and was like, wow, that would be such a great book. So I wrote it down in my cell phone, like made a note to myself. And then when I started, it just came to me. I didn't ever, ever, ever think I would write a book, but there it is. And yes, personal experience does add to it. A lot of my main character, Victoria, I derived from me, and a lot of another main character, Alexander, is based on Corey. So, yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, there you go. And, they talk about that in any form of media or entertainment where you're trying to reach people. And I talk about it in wrestling when I'm trying to explain things to younger guys or what have you. But it's all tied together in that people like all kinds of different things. People have all kinds of different tastes, but we all have the same basic human emotions. And if you can draw on those and touch people, then I think you really accomplished something. And from the reviews that I've seen so far, it appears you have. I haven't had a chance to read the book yet. As you know, I've been busy with the little one, but I definitely plan on reading it. I'm really looking forward to it.
I certainly hope you check it out. I really do. And God bless you and your wife and the little one.
Thank you. Thank you very much. But congratulations on the response, and I'm glad everything is going good. I'm a huge fan of the zombie genre anyway. Always loved it, going back to Night of the Living Dead as a kid, in black and white, scaring the ever-loving living shit out of me. and I'm surprised that zombies have gotten so popular, but, out of all the ghouls or scenarios, popularity aside, why did you, Kelly Fisher, choose the world of zombie survival as your backdrop?
I don't know. It just came to me. Honestly, I'm always, walking down the street and thinking, what if there was a zombie apocalypse right now? What would I do? So I figured, that adds an extra, thrill to the whole story. So that's where I went with it.
That's awesome. That's a reasonable fear. You know, a lot of people listening to the show think these people are a bunch of fucking kooks. But, I mean, I tell you the truth. You know, I often have zombie-related nightmares. Always have. And it does go back to Night of the Living Dead. But that's, like, my one thing is, like, my one giant phobia. You think, oh, the Rev, he's one with the darkness. He's not afraid of anything. I'm scared to death of fucking zombies.
They are scary. Like, what are you going to do? Like, where are you going to go?
Yeah, you got to, what do you have to shoot a family member? You know, what if you have to, you don't know unless you're faced with these scenarios. And, you know, who's to say a giant government virus or plague or nuclear weapon, biological weapon couldn't cause something like that? You know, it's certainly like with 28 days later, they put a more realistic perspective on it. So, hey. Call me crazy, but I think it's a legitimate threat.
Hey, you always got to be ready. You always got to be prepared for that.
Well, you know, you talked about poetry, and I know you actually had seen some of your Facebook posts over the last couple of weeks that you'd actually compiled a lot of the poetry you'd written, and now you have another book coming out that is unrelated to the Last Resort trilogy. Would you care to elaborate on that?
Well, actually, it's a lot of poems that I have written over the years, and I was just looking at in my closet, and I was like, you know, I should totally type these up and put them in a book because they relate so much of what was going on at that point in my life. So it's just a little glimpse of my life, basically, and what goes on in my warped brain.
Well, I always thought you're a pretty interesting person, and I think that, you know, anybody that's got the guts to bare their soul, I respect. You know, I've done it in music and wrestling for years, and, like, people, it's hard to relate to other folks that don't have that artistic enthusiasm, you know, to go out there and express yourself in some way. So that's awesome. So it depends. I told you can go to Amazon.com and pick up The Last Resort, the first chapter, but also now you can pick up your poetry book, Kelly, and what is the title of that?
It's called Revenge.
Awesome. That
yeah.
is awesome. Well, I know, you talked about watching the Goldberg Santa flick, and I know you and your fiance Corey Chavis is a good friend of mine. And for many years, I've always been big horror fans. And so, you know, in the world of weird, the horror genre, whether it be movies, music, books, we like to share great art with our listeners here. That's one thing that we're all about on the show is promoting cool thing that you can just kick back and lose yourself in. And so we like to get the opinions of our guests in terms of what are you listening to, what are you watching, what are you reading, what recommendations would you give to the listening audience?
Well, as an indie author, I have to recommend another indie author, Amanda Hawking. She has so many great paranormal books out right now. You should totally check her out. She's on Amazon.com too. The Walking Dead is a great series. I love it. It's a great TV show. I can't wait till it comes back in February. And also the Dexter series. The Dexter books I read, and they are amazing. So I'm looking forward to watching the next season in Dexter.
Yeah, both of those shows are great. I started following The Walking Dead. Our listeners get pounded with Walking Dead because I'm always singing its praises. We actually had Wendy Barlow, who'd done some extra work on the show, here on as a guest on Halloween, our first show, and we love The Walking Dead. That's been fantastic. Started following that when it was a little black and white comic. I'm just so amazed that it's blown up to what it is and that the show is so outstanding, yet being so different from the original print material. And Dexter, that actually brings me to a point that I wanted to talk about. I've not read the Dexter books myself, but I've heard that there's quite a bit of difference between that and the show, and neither is a bad thing. Would you care to talk about that at all?
I have read all the books in the Dexter series, and I will tell you, it is a big difference between them. The Dexter show and the Dexter books, they kind of have similarities, but there is a huge difference. And I will recommend to everyone that loves Dexter to read Dexter is Delicious. That book, oh, my God, it is so great.
Awesome. Well, I actually have the first couple. Like, that's how behind I am on my reading. I just haven't gotten around to it. But, I definitely, I've heard, like, there's even a lot of things as far as his motivation and Harrison, his son, that is way different than just what I've heard from people that have read them. So that should be interesting. And, you know, you got to go into these things with an open mind, because I have a lot of friends that get so pissed off and bent out of shape when they change something from the source material to the show or what have you. You got to take it for what it is. If it's good, at the end of the day, it's going to reach you and it's going to shine through. And if it sucks, it's not.
But right. You're exactly right. It's the same. But, I mean, like, look, if you read the books and then you watch the show after the books come out and you've already read them, then you can go online and spoil it all for everyone. I just like the fact that they've changed it up, so I can't go online and say, hey, this is what's going to happen next, because I would be wrong.
Yeah, I like being surprised, honestly. Like with The Walking Dead, the television show, you know, before the show came out, of course, I emphatically went back and read all the books again and just totally dorked out on it. And, of course, as the show progresses, like the first episode is almost scene for scene out of the first comic issue, so you're like, whoa, this is crazy. But then as they start taking you on these twists and turns, there's a lot of differences, and none of them, in my opinion, in a bad way, because it's allowed me to be surprised, like for the addition of Shane, for one, because, you know, it's, without spoiling too much, the people that haven't read the comics, he gets whacked off pretty early in the comics, and not by Lori, I mean, he gets killed. But,
I love Shane. He's like my favorite.
Early in the comics, so like he is well stated. I think it may be a case of like the Lafayette syndrome from True Blood, where the actor just went in there and kicked so much ass at the role.
Right,
they're
right.
Like, well, I don't think we can kill this guy after all, and I believe Shane has maybe escaped death by doing that.
He's my favorite. I'm like, oh, he's such a heel, but he has such good points, so.
Yeah, he's a realist, you know. He's the guy saying, maybe we shouldn't be all fucking lollipops and puppy dog farts here, you know.
Exactly. I mean, hello, it's the end of the world. There are dead people wanting to eat you. Hello.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I guess we'll go ahead and start moving down the line here on the interview. Kelly, it's been awesome. Thank you so much for joining us. Got a couple more items that we'll discuss, and then we'll let you get back to doing what you're doing. But, you know, I want to talk about wrestling a little bit, because there always seems to be some sort of wrestling connection to the show with it involving me and even the guests. That's generally how I get them, is either they like wrestling or what have you. So, actually, our wrestling connection we mentioned is you are Corey Chavis's fiance, and excuse me, as I mentioned, I know Corey going back like 10 years. We've been the best of friends. He's one of the only guys I can always count on, no matter how long I go without hearing from him. I'll hear from him, or I'll talk to him. Of course, now with Facebook, it's like a totally different thing. But, you know, there was a time when you just had to pick up the phone and call somebody.
Right.
But anyway, what I was getting at there is that, you know, he's been in the wrestling business. You've been with him for quite a while now. And have you found the notoriety that he's gotten as a wrestler with the Ring of Honor and now being one of the World Tag Team Champions of the NWA? Like, going into this writing project, did that help you? Did it hinder you? Or was it completely a non-factor?
Well, honestly, it's kind of a non-factor, since wrestling fans are so much different than, you know, reading fans at some point. But I mean, being around him did teach me a lot of how to have a thick skin and like learn from people being critical of your work, and just to like let it go and just keep doing what you're doing. Not to add, his support has been the greatest ever. I mean, I would have never ever thought of doing anything like this without his support. So without him, there would be no book, there would be no poetry, there would be nothing.
Yeah, that's the true love, folks. And Corey is the man. He is a man's man, in my opinion, one of the finest guys I've ever known, honestly. But that's great. Now, as far as wrestling goes, what is your relationship with the business these days? Do you give a rat's ass? I know at one time you probably were a fan.
Actually, yeah, I was a huge fan, but lately it's just, you know, I mean, I can take it or leave it. But I will say the local indie shows, please go out and support them. They have so much more talent than what you will see on WWE or TNA.
Yeah, the indies is where it's raw, you know. That's where people, that's where you see the blood, the guts, and the glory, where guys are trying to make it or break it. And, you know, a reputable indie show is going to be your best value for your money anywhere. You can spend the high-dollar tickets on the WWE, and certainly they're the biggest and best show in town. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you want to get down to grassroots and see guys that have passion. Get out to some of these independent shows, and I would agree with you wholeheartedly on that, Kelly.
Yep, that's where people need to take their money to.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us again. This last couple seconds here is yours. Plug whatever you would like our listeners. We know you got your book out there. Make a great Christmas present for somebody who's into horror novels or just into reading, period. Go right ahead. The floor is yours, my dear.
Please, 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 please support your local indie. And if you like reading and you like zombies, check out my book on Amazon.com, The Last Resort, The Savior. Thanks for having me, Dan. I'm so flattered that you asked me.
Oh, thank you for joining us. It's been an awesome interview, and I hope the fans got an insight into what you got going on here with your new book trilogy in the world of zombies, and that's right up our alley here. So hopefully it'll drive a few more sales your way.
Thank you. Give the baby and wife a kiss for me.
I will do it, and you have a great evening.
All right, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Kelly Fisher, author of The Last Resort, The Savior, the zombie romantic trilogy. Really an interesting concept, and that's a very interesting lady, so I know she's got a great story to tell there. Better go over to Amazon.com and check that out. Only 99 cents. What a stocking stuffer that would be. Okay, well, now, you know, we talked about how we did not get the opportunity to honor Dimebag Darrell as we would have liked. And my daughter was born. I did not have the time nor the patience to run a whole episode of the program here. So we ran the archive, and it went great. But I want to give, for the moment, on this episode, my personal tribute to Dimebag Darrell. December 8th, 2004 was the date that he was shot. So we're just a little over a week away from the anniversary of that. Unbelievable that it has been 7 years since we lost that man. He, of course, is a former guitar player of Pantera. Humongous. Words are hard to come up with when it comes to describing this man's influence on my life. As a young man, you know, we idolized Pantera. I was a little metal brat from 14 on, and we, you know, I dressed up as Phil Anselmo for Halloween when I was in the seventh grade. You know, I've dyed my beard red on many occasions just as a commemoration. We used to watch these guys' home videos and watch them on TV in their interviews and read them in the magazines, and we looked up to them so much because they were so down-to-earth and so relatable and so different than all the bullshit that was coming out in the early 90s. See, you know, I was a kid of the 80s, but my teenage years, my formative years came in the 90s, and, well, if you're a heavy metal fan, the 90s didn't have a whole hell of a lot to crow about. That's when alternative had kind of taken over, and you know, it was no longer cool to shred and play loud solos and epic songs, and it was no longer cool to be heavy metal. And Pantera gave not one fuck about that. And they debuted with Far Beyond Driven in 1993 when metal was all but dead, debuted at number one on the Billboard charts with no support from MTV, with no support from radio. And these guys just became me and my friends fighting heroes, man. They were like us. They were some rednecks from the South. They were from Texas. We were from Tennessee. You know, they were tattooed. They've been told they were trash. They fought, and they rose above it, and they made something of themselves in one of the biggest rock bands in the history of the world. And Dimebag was always one of the men of the heart and soul of that. You know, he's the lead guitar player, one of the chief songwriters, very business-minded with his brother, Benny Paul, and building their brand. As I said, words are hard for me to find, so I'm not going to keep giving you words. I'm going to give you music and in tribute to Dimebag Darrell, my favorite Pantera song. The night this man died, I listened to this song in the solo, and I ain't ashamed to tell you, I cried like a baby. This is my favorite Dimebag Darrell piece of work. One of the most amazing solos, emotional solos in a song. This is off of the 1996 Great Southern Trendkill album. The song is called Floods. Rest in peace. Do a black tooth for Dimebag Darrell. Get your pull.
Yeah.
And that was Flood off the Great Southern Train Kill from 1996 by the legendary and almighty Pantera. My opinion, perhaps the greatest album of their catalog. A very funny story about that album. It came out in 1996, just a few months, actually right around the time, if I recall correctly. I actually went to the record store when there wasn't such a thing and purchased both that and the new Metallica album, which was their first album in many years, which was Load. And, of course, that was the one universally panned by their longtime fans as their selling out name Metallica. You know, they can do whatever they want to do. They've touched me in such a way over my life that I could not dare fault them for making music they wanted to make. Whether or not I liked it, I really didn't care for it. But the Great Southern Trendkill totally floored me, and I'd been a Pantera fan since the Cowboys from Hell album. So that was, it went through that, and then Bogus Play Power, and then Far Beyond Driven, and then The Great Southern Trendkill. It was perhaps their most raw, powerful compilation that they ever recorded, and I suggest you do yourself a favor if you don't own it. If you don't own it, why the hell not? If you don't, go over to iTunes.com or Amazon.com and make your purchase of that album. Get Santa Claus to bring it to you for Christmas or something, because if you don't own that, you need to. Moving on with the show. Been a great night so far. We just got a little bit left. We're going to go with the TV Casualty next, and then going to try to summon some spirits later with the Seance of the Damned to end the show. But right now it is time. For TV Casualty, a weekly look at the DC Animated Universe, starting with Batman, the Animated Series. We've been at this for a few weeks now, and now we're moving on to the second appearance of the Joker, Batman's, of course, most famous villain. Since we only have a few moments left in the show, I was going to try to wrap it up within an hour. We're going to be running a little over, but what else is new? But I do want to give a brief synopsis. This is episode 4, entitled The Last Laugh, directed by Kevin Altieri, and aired September 22nd, 1992. And the brief synopsis of the episode basically is the Joker covers Gotham City in a cloud of laughing gas and begins plundering the crazed city. After Alfred, the butler, Alfred Pennyworth, is infected with the toxin, Batman has added incentive to stop the Joker and acquire an antidote from him before all of Gotham dies with a smile. And pretty garish scenes in this for a cartoon. I remember this as a kid. If you recall from the Batman Tim Burton film from 1989, Jack Nicholson as the Joker, his chief weapon, of course, in that entire reign of terror, was the Joker gas, which would poison its victims, causing them literally to laugh themselves to death. And they played that up here in this episode with no remorse. No one actually died. Batman always got the antidote to them in time. Of course, at the end, Batman ends up saving the day, as always, and Joker goes back to Arkham Asylum, but not after a very entertaining fight between Batman and the Joker and his various henchmen, who are, of course, men made up like clowns, one of which you find is not a man at all, but a giant robot made up to look like a clown, named adequately Captain Clown. And Batman ends up throwing him in a trash compactor and smashing his head in with a stick. And, of course, the Joker goes on a tirade about him killing Captain Clown. There's also another great scene where he puts Batman in a garbage can and decides, well, that he needs some air holes to breathe. So he takes a knife and starts maniacally stabbing the garbage can, Batman just avoiding puncture within inches. And then the big battle, the Joker dumps a giant bin of garbage on Batman and then proceeds to make fun of his stench, which, as cheesy as it is, entertains the hell out of me every single time. It's line something along the lines of, "You look so bad, I can smell you from here." And Mark Hamill is really the shining star of this episode, as is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. But Mark Hamill, Luke Skywalker, if you're a Star Wars fan, but if you're a Batman fan, you know him as the Joker, and his voice of the Joker, as I've mentioned here on the show before, is perhaps my favorite incarnation of capturing both the
harmless prankster and the sadistic murderer, and the Joker can turn on a dime, and you never know, and Mark Hamill has been able to capture that better than anyone. Fantastic episode. Highly recommended. We will be back next week with episode number 5, entitled Pretty Poison, where we talk about the debut of a very famous female villain in the Batman legend and lore, a young scientist, a botanist by the name of Pamela Isley, who unfortunately became possessed by her own serums and her own concoctions, became the evil supervillain Poison Ivy, who can manipulate plant life. So that's going to be a great episode, one I look back on with great fondness and look very much forward to reviewing that for you next week. But fans, as we're wrapping up the show, before we go, you know, last week we had some problems with the Ouija board. I tried to summon a spirit, but all I got was this, I don't know if it's a demon, I don't know if it actually is him, but someone claiming to be Jake the Snake Roberts, continually jumping in through my white noise line and my Ouija board and appearing on the show last week claiming to be the British Bulldog. Obviously, it was Jake. And, you know, he's got his continuing joke on me, he's the Never Trust a Snake. So I have purchased a new Ouija board. I went out and saw my witch doctor and got all this took care of. So hopefully this time we will speak with a spirit of the deceased. So I have prepared the incantations, and I am prepared to summon the damned here on the Midnight Black Mass. Lo Summoner Nostrasna. Lo Summoner Nostrasna. I call upon you spirits to manifest themselves in the airwave and appear here with us, live on the air, past the witching hour. Okay, I think we do have some activity. I've not been completely bamboozled. This Ouija board does appear to be working. Do we have a guest on the line?
Yes, we do.
Wait, okay, and then who might this be?
This is Michael.
Well, welcome to the show. Do you have a last name, Michael?
Jackson, Jefferson.
Wait a minute. With all due respect, sir, did you almost just say Jackson? Your voice does sound awful familiar.
Oh, okay, you got me. I guess it doesn't matter now. Yes, it is me, the King of Pop, Michael Jackson.
Well, it is truly an honor, sir. You heard it here, folks. One of the biggest stars of all time, right here on the Midnight Black Mass. Now, you might say, Rev, you don't look like the type to be a Michael Jackson fan, and certainly it isn't my normal cup of tea, but remember, I'm a child of the 80s, so it was pretty much required that you like Michael Jackson at some point or another. I'm not embarrassed to say I owned a Thriller record player that came with the album. It's my first musical purchase.
Oh, well, thank you very much for having me, Mr. Reverend, and thank you for your kindness. I'm not normally fond of the media, so I appreciate you being so inviting. Come on!
Well, the world of entertainment certainly was rocked with your loss last year, Michael. I know you were planning a big comeback tour and a new album, and you died suddenly. Now your doctor, Conrad Murray, has actually been sentenced to some serious hard time in the prison in the safe pen in relationship to your death.
And I miss my fans, and I miss my family, as crazy as they might have been. But I'm very sad to see Dr. Murray fall victim to the evil doo-doo heads in the corporate media. I love being the King of Pop, but in the end, he did me a great service.
Wait, what exactly do you mean by that, Michael? Do you mean you wanted to die?
I didn't want to do anything but make music and live my life. But with that being said, dying was the best thing to happen to my career and my personal life since, well, the Thriller music video.
Well, no one would argue that your popularity, even posthumously, is at an all-time high. There was never a Michael Jackson video game while you were alive, certainly.
Now you're starting to see the big picture, friend. My good buddy Kurt Cobain was the first guy I saw this happen to, and I figured he could barely strum 3 chords, and he was worshipped like Jimi Hendrix when he passed away. I kind of always felt since I actually had talent, if I died, I'd become a god. And I have. I actually have my own Neverland Ranch in heaven.
Well, I don't think anyone would deny your talent. You came from a musical family. You started in the music industry at a very young age in Motown with the Jackson 5. You could play nearly every instrument known to man. Certainly, you deserve to be celebrated for that.
And let's not forget the certain controversies that sort of disappeared.
Oh, well, I actually didn't expect you to touch that, but, yeah, they certainly did.
And I'm very happy for my legacy. I'm very happy to be remembered as the king of pop and not a child molester. I mean, anyway, anybody who hates Dr. Murray is ignorant, ignorant. Chick-shamon, hey! Well, good night, Mr. Rev. I have many adventures to continue here in the Neverland Palace in heaven. Merry Christmas to all. Joe Paterno, you might want to call Dr. Murray. Goodbye.
Oh, I don't know what to think about these guests anymore, folks. I there was a moment I thought that actually might have been the king of pop, Michael Jackson. And then there were moments I also thought it might have been someone playing a sick joke on me or some entity. But that's all that how are you going to get bigger than that? Like, why would we need to try to summon another spirit? I don't think that's necessary. The king of pop, Michael Jackson, he was only on for a couple minutes, but wow, there you go, folks. So, in any event, that wraps up another edition of this week's Midnight Black Mass. We're going to leave you with some tunes before we head out the door here. We got Hank 3 off the Attention Deficit Domination album with a tune called I Feel Sacrificed. Tomorrow night, if you're in Cornelia, Georgia, go support my boys, Azriel, and my other boy, Sean Tempers, who I might not technically manage anymore, but I would still be very proud if he won the NWA World title. Not as proud as if Azriel won it, but I'd still be very proud. So you need to go see one of those two men defeat Scrap Iron Adam Pearce to become the NWA World Heavyweight Champion. I'm going to be at the Honest Pine in Chattanooga, Tennessee to see Unknown Hints. I'll also be in Rossville, Georgia briefly to check on my Reign of Terror and Empire Pro Wrestling there. And the Rev will be back 1 week from tonight on December the 23rd/24th. We'll be crossing into the barrier of Christmas Eve. Will I melt? Who knows, fans? Who knows? But thank you for joining us yet again. It's been another tremendous edition of the Midnight Black Mass, and we'll see you in a week.
You're listening to the GWH Radio Network, brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Your show will return momentarily. Did you know that there's more to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com than just Georgia Wrestling History? It's true. Not only can you find documented cards, results, and more on pro wrestling in Georgia dating back to the 19th century, but you can also find out where live and local wrestling may be near you today, and not just in Georgia. We also cover the southeastern regional scene in Alabama, Florida, Tennessee, and the Carolinas. You want more? Well, we also cover the major worldwide wrestling and MMA promotions as well, including WWE, UFC, TNA, Strikeforce, Ring of Honor, and more. And so do our radio shows. You can find all of this, and maybe a bit more, by logging on to GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we are capturing the legends of yesterday and covering the stars of today. GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
I give my for listening to this broadcast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.